I am Planta on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. If you've had a child or are about to, an indispensable tool is Canada's Toddler Care Book, a complete guide from 1 to 5 years old. Its author, Dr. Jeremy Friedman, joins me now. He is a division head of pediatric medicine at Toronto's Hospital for Sick Children, and he's an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Toronto. He joins me from here in Vancouver this day to discuss this comprehensive, useful, and well-illustrated book. It contains much information from strategies on various toddler issues, from behavior, leisure, sleep, food, nutrition, and more. Canada's Toddler Care Book is published by Robert Rose. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Dr. Jeremy Friedman. Good morning, Dr. Friedman.
Good morning, Jay. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. You would think, Dr. Friedman, with the internet, that there'd be countless resources on much of what you write about in the book available online for parents and would-be parents to read. Do you find there's a lot of misinformation out there?
Yeah, Jay, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there is a fortune. I mean, there's a real information sort of explosion out there. I think the problem is that for, you know, every good piece of information, there's probably another piece of misinformation. And I guess what we were hoping to do was to have sort of a one-stop shopping source that would really hopefully have just information and not too much in the way of misinformation.
What's a misconception that we have that you correct in the book, perhaps?
Let me think. Well, you know, I think in terms of probably the biggest question that comes up that I find in my practice with parents is asking, you know, what is normal? And you can finish the sentence however you want. So if my child isn't talking by the age of 2, if my child isn't walking by the age of 14 months, these kind of things where, you know, your child tends to be part of a peer group, whether it's a play group or a neighborhood group or just a bunch of siblings, and the parents start to get a little bit anxious when they find that perhaps their child isn't doing things at the exact same pace as everybody else. And I think what we've tried to go to lengths in the book is to really try and, you know, walk parents through it and in most cases hopefully actually reassure them rather than sort of, you know, increase the anxiety, which is what I think a lot of the internet information might do sometimes.
Now, picking something out of the thin air, like SIDS, for example.
Yeah.
Preventing that. Should the child be sleeping face down or face up?
So the sort of little kind of slogan is back to sleep. So lying on their backs in the first 6 months and putting them to sleep has been shown very clearly in a number of different countries in the world over the years to bring down the risk of crib death or SIDS. And, you know, it's not a foolproof thing. Certainly there is still the occasional death, but probably more than 50% of kids who used to die no longer do because parents are putting their children to sleep on their backs.
Now, in the book, there are a couple of sections there called Dad's Role.
Right.
Where you have what fathers should do.
Right.
Who did you write the book for?
Well, I'd like to think that we wrote the book for everybody. So both parents, grandparents, people who look after kids as caregivers, so that it's really not just, you know, specifically for, say, the mom, who does tend to be the major caregiver in most cases. I mean, obviously, as a father myself, I had a little bit of a vested interest in making sure that we engaged fathers, because I think I'd like to think that most fathers really want to be involved, but they're just not sure exactly how to be useful, and they feel sometimes, you know, a little inadequate, perhaps, or that they're sort of, it's not something that they can control. And I think what we try to do in just a, you know, very brief way, bearing in mind that most of us as men don't have huge spans of attention, just in a few pages in each chapter, trying to sort of focus in on a few points where dads could really come in and make a big difference in their child's care.
How many kids do you have?
I have 2.
And they're...
I have a little girl who's 8 and a little boy who's 10. So, you know, you can imagine we wrote this book. It probably took a couple of years to put together. So I was just coming out of the sort of toddler group, toddler age for my youngest. And that's, to be honest, what motivated me in part, because I thought, listen, I've been a pediatrician for actually about 5 or 6 years before I even had my first child, and there were still so many, even with all that theoretical knowledge, there were still so many questions that my wife and I had on a daily, weekly basis that I thought that there's got to be a lot of people out there asking the same questions.
Did you find, I mean, your wife is an occupational therapist and she works with children.
Right.
as well. Did you find that you encountered difficulties raising your own children?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, I think it's actually amazing that, as I say, after really being in pediatric practice for probably 5 or 6 years before my first child arrived, and actually having counseled parents for that length of time on how to actually sort of deal with babies and toddlers, it sort of actually blew me away to realize how little I actually knew from a practical point of view. I had all the theoretical knowledge, but to be honest, I think what parents of toddlers want is they want practical strategies. You know, you can have theory as much as you want, but if your child's having a temper tantrum or is not sleeping at night, what you want to know is, like, what is the strategy to get me through this?
Does it get easier after having more than one child?
I think it does. I mean, I think the anxiety gets less. That said, every single child seems to be very different, and certainly I know in our family, even just with the two of them, their personalities are so different that the challenges were actually really very different, and it was almost like bringing up, you know, two different species in a way. I mean, I guess the one was a boy, the one was a girl, but still so different that there were still many things that we had to learn. So I think sometimes there's a danger of assuming that your second, third, or even fourth child will just be a carbon copy of your first, and I think that's a dangerous assumption because, as we all know, the world's made up of so many different, you know, personality types and temperament types, and that's a big part of parenting a toddler.
Well, one of the things that surprised me in reading the book was just how critical these first 5 years are, 1 to 5, and how much growth happens and development. What is critical for a parent to watch for in terms of not only physical development, but also mental development, social development?
Yeah, I think you've hit on an incredibly important point that people are actually just starting to realize, you know, not only in the medical field, but in the educational field and government and et cetera, in terms of how critical the first years are in terms of shaping this child's, you know, future. And just on a very sort of day-to-day level, for example, things like eating habits and even sleeping habits and stuff like that really get established pretty early on. And if you get into bad habits in your toddler years, they're going to be very, very difficult to extinguish as the child gets over and even into adulthood. And what we're seeing is, take for example eating. I mean, if you start off and you start getting into problems of bad eating habits and perhaps even obesity, even as a child, you know, trying to rectify those later on is extremely difficult. So why battle with that? Why not just start right from the word go and try and get them into good habits?
Now, your work at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, you see children every day. Do you find that obesity is a problem amongst young people?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, you know, things have changed in the last 20, 30 years. The figures would suggest that there's probably a threefold increase in the number of kids that are overweight and obese. And it's interesting because to some extent, the health problems, actually, you don't really see them quite as much in pediatrics, in childhood, but you start to see them in early adulthood. And these things like high blood pressure, diabetes, heart attacks, I mean, they start to really kick in as an adult. But if you set the tone early on, as I say, it's a very hard kind of problem to get rid of. So that's really why we need to work at prevention, I think, rather than trying to deal with, you know, medicating and operating and all these kind of things at a later stage.
I recall something in the book about fast food. Do you Right. suggest that children this young be eating fast food?
Well, you know what, I like to think that the book and my own sort of philosophy is a kind of a moderate thing. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that once in a while we go and we go and do fast food, but I think it's all about moderation. I mean, I think a family that's sort of fast food is part of their routine, daily and weekly sort of habit, that's probably not a good idea. On the other hand, you know, the odd time where it's just convenient or as a treat to go and make a fast food meal, you know, that's absolutely fine. So I think it's like anything, you know, trying to completely avoid something is probably unrealistic and it's probably destined to failure, but what you want to do is make sure that it doesn't become, you know, it's part of a routine and that the children appreciate that it's something that probably they shouldn't be doing, but once in a while is okay.
The sleeping habits, I forgot, because I haven't been around children in a long time.
Right.
Sleeping habits, children this age sleep a lot, is that right?
Well, I think parents would like them to sleep probably more than they do.
Right.
You know, what we've done in the book is put a little bit about what parents can expect at each age, because it's pretty different in terms of from the first year of life to the second year of life and then progressively up to the fifth year of life. So there are different expectations from what you can, fairly expect a child to do and when you should be dropping the daytime naps to make sure that they sleep a bit better at night. But I think the biggest problem that people sort of come to us with at this age is children either not willing to go to bed at bedtime or children waking up continuously during the night and waking their parents up and everybody becomes sleep deprived.
Now, going to the doctor, obviously, that's an important thing in any age. But in these first few years, it's quite important. You write in the book, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's going to be a whole spectrum of people, and I'm certainly one who believes that certainly when you get older, if you're not sick, then you don't necessarily want to be seeing the doctor too often. But I think that what's slightly different in the first few years of life is there's a lot of anticipatory guidance. So all these kind of questions that come up around your individual child's feeding, sleeping, development, the truth is that you probably are going to want to be asking these questions, and it's not so much that anything has to necessarily be done to the children at their routine checkups, apart from perhaps some routine immunizations, but you do get an opportunity to sort of touch base on all of these things and just, you know, to a large extent, almost just to make you feel a little less anxious or a little more comfortable that everything's going as it should be.
Temper tantrums, you had mentioned that earlier.
Right.
How normal are they?
Well, you know what, I think the important thing for parents to realize is that almost all children will have temper tantrums in the toddler age group. You know, the problem is that their sort of ability to do things is increasing at a rapid pace. So they're able to start moving around and sort of their motor skills are outweighing their verbal skills because they're still not able to really communicate properly and articulate what they want. And that combination leads to a tremendous amount of frustration. And the frustration needs a way to come out, and because they can't really express it verbally, it basically will land up in a temper tantrum. So that's pretty normal, but, you know, that's all well and good, but you need to know sort of how to deal with it. And in the book, we try and take parents through a few kind of just strategies that still won't make it a pleasant experience, but at least will make it manageable and we'll see them through until that phase passes by.
So what do you do, though? This is fascinating to me because in preparing for this, I'd mentioned that I was talking to you on my Facebook account.
Right.
And a lot of friends of mine who have kids sent in notes about this, and this came up, temper tantrums, whereas a friend of mine whose daughter is two throws such just angry tantrums, throwing
right.
things and the sort. How do you deal with that?
Well, a little bit depends on the environment. So it's a slightly different situation if it happens at home, which is kind of a little bit more in your control, or if it happens in the grocery store. I remember once it happened, I had my child out at the museum in Toronto, and there was this temper tantrum sort of in the middle of the museum, lying on the floor, kicking and screaming, which certainly wasn't a good advertisement for a pediatrician's child. But it's just, that just goes to show that, honestly, I mean, it really does happen to everybody all the time. And I think people that sort of, you know, look at that as an abnormal situation probably haven't had toddlers around recently. In terms of what you do, so we go through all the strategies, but in a nutshell, remaining calm is essential. So the more kind of emotional and kind of wound up the parent becomes, the more wound up the child becomes, and it's a vicious cycle. So really staying calm is incredibly important. During the actual tantrum, there's really nothing you can do. You know, I see parents kind of trying to rationalize with their child while they're screaming, kicking, and spitting and doing whatever else they're doing. There's no point. I mean, it's not a rational moment. This is not a time to try and teach a child something. They're not going to hear anything. So essentially just letting the tantrum kind of exhaust itself until the child is exhausted, and then really providing them with some sort of reassurance and trying to essentially distract them and move them on to the next activity without really giving them any positive reinforcement. I mean, the last thing that one wants to do is give in to what has caused the tantrum, because clearly if you do that, the next time the child wants something, it's a bit of a no-brainer. They're going to know that if they don't get what they want, all they have to do is throw the tantrum and you know, they're off to the races. So, you know, those are a few basic principles, but I'm not pretending that it's simple. And in the book, we spend quite a few pages going through it step by step and what to do if you're in a public place, because that's a little different. You don't necessarily want your child sort of pulling all the groceries off the grocery shelves or something like that.
And in terms of disciplining a child, the timeout, is that the most useful one you found? I mean, obviously physical and verbal punishment, that's out, right?
Yeah, you know, I think the timeout is probably still, to me, the most effective of the particular strategies. The truth is, a lot depends on the individual child's temperament and the sort of family kind of setup, but I'd say that's still the most popular, and that's the one we probably describe in the most detail in the book. You know, the problem, one of the basic principles about discipline, you know, when you look in the Oxford Dictionary, discipline really translates to training, not punishment. I mean, people think of discipline, you think of punishment, but that's actually not what discipline is. Discipline is training. Probably one of the most important principles is being a positive role model. You can imagine what sort of message it sends to your child if you either physically punish them, as in spanking, or even sort of verbally abuse them, you know, as in shouting and screaming at them. It sends the wrong message to them, because it sends the message that this is how you deal with, you know, with things when they're not going your way, which is exactly the opposite of what you're trying to get to them. So positive role modeling is a big part of discipline.
Another note that I got on my Facebook was someone's three-year-old nephew would throw tantrums playing video games. And I was just thinking, should a two- or three-year-old child be playing video games?
So that's a great question, and I mean, it's, you know, it's a whole new world with all the, you know, different options in terms of screen time. And I think that, again, a little bit of moderation is really important. There certainly are pediatric associations out there that say certainly before the age of two, you know, any television and computers really are pretty unhelpful, and you should do absolutely nothing. I think that's probably unrealistic. Let's face it, we all, you know, have periods where we perhaps want to just cool down, and either the television or computer or even a computer game is a quite a good potential option for kids. I think at the age of three, the important things are to limit the amount of time that the child's doing it, so certainly less than maybe 1 hour or so a day, and really being very, very careful about what they're doing. So television, computer, internet. There are actually some programs that are relatively educational. I don't think any of them are as good as just interacting directly with your child. But there are some that are reasonably good, and then there are some that, of course, are terrible. They're full of, you know, sort of violence and completely bad examples and sending the wrong message. And if you're letting your child watch that, obviously you're opening up things for a total disaster.
And the importance of reading to a child.
I think, you know, to be honest, that is one of the most critical things. And I think, unfortunately, we've kind of gone away from that a little bit. Before, there were so many other entertainment options, I think probably more families read to their kids. But there are so many sort of values in just reading, whether it's the sort of one-on-one quality interaction between parent and child, the ability for them to use their imagination, you know, to sort of actually interact and ask questions, for you to actually pick, you know, choose what you're actually reading. There are just so many positives. And there's a tremendous amount of research showing that if there's one way of making your kid sort of develop to sort of maximize their potential in the most effective way, probably reading to your child is the one thing that's been proven to actually be most helpful.
Dr. Friedman, we could talk for hours. This is a fascinating book. There's so many things to talk about. I appreciate your time today. Congratulations on the book. Continued good luck with it.
Thanks very much, Jeff.
You're very welcome. The book is called Canada's Toddler Care Book, A Complete Guide from 1 to 5 Years Old, published by Robert Rose. Dr. Jeremy Friedman on the line. I'm Joseph Planta.